are now listening to the Serious Growth Podcast with your host, Leo Costa Jr.
I dress like this every day.
Hey, really?
Except Friday.
Yeah, it's like
I've got nowhere to go.
I feel like the black and red dresses of the world have gone to the wayside. You know, any kind of my closet is like, help, we need you to wear our clothes.
Yeah, I know.
My high heels and everything. It's like, what a bummer.
Ugh. No kidding.
How are you?
So I just keep doing it. I'm doing fine. How about you?
Good. It's so nice to see you finally.
It's been a lot of years. Well, in fact, didn't we do it? Was it just a radio show that we did?
Yeah.
It wasn't Skype or anything, was it?
No, we didn't. And I've been hemming and hawing about Zoom because I don't have the distribution like I have with the radio show.
Yeah.
But I've been doing more of these. So maybe if you want, we can flip this around like in the next week or something, and I'll interview for the Best Ever You show this way.
Yeah. No, I think that'd be great. Panel.
All right.
When did we do the last one? About 1,000 years ago?
Just about 1,000 years ago.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has been. There's a lot of learning that goes with doing everything on the internet and writing books and things like that. And then my dad was so sick that I couldn't even focus.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, during that time, yeah. I saw here that you said you're from Maine, California?
I have never heard
of Maine, California.
No. I'm actually from...
Oh, Maine and
I live
California.
In Maine, but I moved here from California. No, I get it. No, we actually have... funky names like that in Maine, like there's Poland Maine and China Maine and California Maine. And no, that's a valid question.
Welcome to Serious Growth Podcast. Hopefully the end game here today is that we get some truth told about something. I just told you a really truthful fact, by the way. So I've already started it. Okay. So now it's your turn. Anyway. Okay. So I know that you're corporate development consultant. Exactly what does that mean?
That's a catch-all, isn't it? That's a catch-all. Corporate development consultant. I'd probably say first and foremost, I'm a mom of four boys who are 18, 20, 22, and 24. And what if we want to get really real, like everything in back of me, this is my home office for a really long time now. To kind of keep my foot working, you know, keep a foot in the door working while raising four boys from home. And what I've done there is started Best Ever You. So there's besteveryou.com. And then I've become an author with Hay House. So I've become, I kind of keep my expertise in two areas, really, in the financial services realm, and then also in the personal growth, personal development, self-help world through Best Ever You. And but I basically help people, brands, and businesses be their best. If you want to.
And did you get this through school, firsthand experience, both? How did that all come about?
Probably, you know, I think I get to creep up in age too. I'm at almost 51. You certainly gather life experiences for sure. But I do also attend Harvard Business School for leadership. And I have degrees in mass communications. I've done news anchoring. I've, you know, again, been in the financial services industry for a really long time. And we're creeping up on a number of years here with Best Ever You. So I definitely read a lot and have written books and, you know, just I'm a life coach. I definitely have credentials in a variety of different things to help people as we encounter them.
Yeah. So what led you into the financial services side? Are you good at math?
Yeah, actually. I am. I'm good at math.
I thought I was asking another dumb question.
Yeah, no, I'm probably what I'm better at, actually, more of the logical things. I get really frustrated in the creative industry where you don't know whether somebody likes something you've done or doesn't or whatever. Yeah. To me, two plus two equally four is perfect. So
yeah, it's a whole different deal there, yeah.
That's a longer story of, like, when I was a kid, after I graduated from college. Yeah, kick back a little bit. This one's long. Exactly. Cheers. Cheers. I'll start talking. No, I had, my parents went bankrupt when I was in college. And so, doozy. They owned a chain of video stores. And so I put myself through college working full time and all this stuff, graduated. And there was this job available at this company at the time called Merrill Corporation. And I called the CEO for a job, not knowing anything about what I was doing really, and just said, you know, I want to work there. I thought he was, I had seen him on the news and things like that, and thought that's a good company. And so I called the CEO and asked for a job, and the secretary actually put me through.
Really?
Yes. And so it was one of those moments where you're like, oh no, what did I just do?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, I just did this. So he said, call me at when the new year starts and we'll schedule an interview. So I drove up in my car, which at the time both doors were pretty much broken, and I'm in my suit and all this stuff, and to get out of the car.
Yeah, you know,
one of those, just a complete clunker.
Yeah.
Anyway, to get out of the car, I have to climb over the stick shift.
Oh, beautiful.
Somehow roll the window down and, you know, like open it from the inside. If I'm climbing over the suit. So I get in for the interview and he goes, that's quite a car you have out there.
Not knowing.
Yeah. Yeah. I've paraphrased that down over the years, but basically I didn't know when I drove up that the whole building was windows.
I was going to say, did you park right in front of his office or something?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Completely. So there was a clear shot of me getting out of that car. I'm sure whoever saw it. But anyway, I ended up getting the job. And he said, you know, basically I was to implement the Edgar system for the company and the country, help implement it. And that was financial services. And it's the process of making all the disclosure materials electronic. You know, stocks and proxies and you know, all the stuff you get with what you invest in, making that electronic. And that was my start. I think it might've been 2021.
Wow.
This week. Yeah.
Yeah. That's quite a break in right there.
Wasn't it? Yeah. That car.
Yeah. I want to ask you a question with regard to the, your parents' video stores. Is this during the time, because I remember video places around here started taking a hit. Was that like when the Redbox came in and the Amazons of the world? That have
no impact? Way before that. Go back into like Blockbuster mode. Blockbuster. They owned a chain of video stores before Blockbuster existed.
And so they're like a mom and pop.
And they weren't put out of business because of Blockbuster. They were put out of business for some other reasons that we just can't probably even talk about. But
I was just curious because I know a lot of them went out there for a while.
Yeah.
So was it? Yeah.
Well, my parents thought of Redbox before Redbox existed. They had this thing that they would deliver to gas stations and grocery stores that was a way to check. So what they called them super hits, which were movies like, you know, when Top Gun came out, they guaranteed everybody would get a copy of it and, you know, all this cool stuff. So go way back.
Okay. Yeah. Is Redbox still around?
Yeah, they're, in fact, I just saw on, we have like Roku, there's a Redbox app you can actually download on your TV and it's got all the movies there. It looks like it might be a little cheaper to actually go get them out of Redbox, but I don't know how that all works right now with COVID.
Yeah.
If you're going to go, but yeah, they've got an app. There's an app for that.
It seems like there's an app for everything really anymore.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so then you're in the financial services, 21. Now, how long were you there? And did you work for the same company for the whole time?
I worked for the same company for a really long time. And I think I had what happens to a lot of women happen, babies, and trying to figure out how to juggle it all. It was really challenging to me to have two small children, you know, close in age. They're now 23 and going to be 25. And fly around and train salespeople and customer service people. You know, it just was such a pull on me. And I really felt like the kids needed to be priority or it was just going to be, you know, a mess. So that's all in Percolate. But that whole period of time is in Percolate where I got divorced, got remarried, had more kids, moved across the country to California, just a complete like blah. And that's a pretty good juicy chapter Percolate.
No, Yeah, it's you know, that's a hard thing to do, especially if you really like what you're doing or love what you're doing. To be put in that spot's a tough one.
Yeah, yeah, and I feel for people when people are trying to figure out if they should stay at home or work or do both or do what. I mean, it there's no parent, male or female, that doesn't struggle with that, for sure. Yeah. In some capacity.
Yeah. You know something? I've been doing something that I've loved for forever, for 38 years now. And fortunately, I'm going to say I was a good dad, but I was, you know, I was faced with that. And I tell people, and I know this sounds kind of shallow, but I've been a good dad. I'm going to preface it by that. And, you know, my kids still love me and we talk about all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's sort of my proof. But I've always told people the most important thing for me is my business. And it sounds kind of shallow, but that doesn't mean that my kids aren't right there. I'm just being really honest with you. It's the most important thing to me because it's what gives me the livelihood that everybody has.
Yeah.
Hello. And I was lucky that I had, you know, now ex-wife that was, I mean, she filled that sort of that side of it. But it cost me, I think, to a degree, it cost me my marriage. Just because I've never let off the hook on that, you know, I've always been down that road.
I agree. I think a lot of people are faced with whatever they're faced with, and people make decisions. You know, I think you made the best decision for you, and that's what we always say. You know, as you're faced with difficult decisions, make the ones that resonate with you, that are from your heart, from your emotions, and what you think is best. And as long as you've done that, you know, there's, you know, I don't know, there's not much to argue with or.
Well, there's always consequences. There's always trade-offs.
Sure. Yeah.
That's just the way it goes. That's life.
Anything. Anything. Yeah. Life. Yeah.
Okay. So one question I really had now, when you work for that financial services place, did you make enough money to get a new car or at least a used one?
Yes.
With the doors that actually worked? Well, you did.
Yes. Only the funny thing. Yes, the doors worked and everything. The problem with that car was it was such a great car, I couldn't fit the car seat in the back seat. So that one had to go too. So, you know, we were quickly in minivan mode. I thought, at the time, you know, and you got to go back 100,000 years ago, but it was a Ford Probe is what I wanted. And I got a royal blue Ford Probe. But you could not fit the car seats.
Right.
In the back seat. So
You could have put it on the roof. Why are you worried about being a good mother?
Connor probably would have loved that, actually.
Yeah. All right. So then after your financial services thing, is this when you moved out to good old California for a while?
Yep.
Yeah. Were you, go ahead.
What? No, you go.
I was going to say, did you, I assume that you guys drove across California, and where did you end up, and were you still in financial services at that point, or did your career change?
My career took a steady backseat to just about everything that was going on for a fairly long period of time, because I had two more children. So the kids, I have four boys, are each 2 years apart, and there was no internet like there is now. I mean, there was internet, but it was definitely dial up and things like that. So it was it was a little bit more challenging to work from home back then. So I did not work for a pretty good period of time in any real full-time capacity. I've always worked part-time consulting for financial services and things like that. There's no gap in my resume at all from being a mom or anything like that, as far as, you know, working or staying consulting or doing something. But I do have gaps in my resume, you know, actually being out of the house, full-time employed. I haven't done that for a long time, actually.
Are you still in California?
No, we live in Maine now.
Went back to Maine.
Yeah, we live in Maine. We've lived here since 2004. I'm a Midwestern girl at heart. I was raised in Iowa, born in Minnesota. So I've kind of lived everywhere now, and we've lived in Maine since 2004.
Okay, so when did the Best of You, I think when I did your show or that radio show one time, we talked about Best of You. What exactly, or Best Ever You?
Best Ever You,
yeah. So what is that? Is that a book? Is that a, what is that?
Best Ever You is basically a multimedia company where we specialize in helping, like we said, people, brands, and businesses be their best. So it's a website, it's a radio show that has over 500 shows now and millions of downloads. And it's a book, it's life coaching, it's free articles online. I think that's what I like the best probably about it is the website and all the different writers that we have. We have, I want to say over 500 people that write for us now. So if somebody is out there with their own book, brand, business, concept, you know, something that helps people be their best, they can submit articles to us and we'll link back to their website and their picture, bio, you know, all that goes with the article. So a lot of article marketing type of materials out there that are all free for the public to read and stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So this is not then at this point, Best Ever You. This is not you then consulting these other businesses. This is just then, if I'm understanding you, is it just a bunch of information for businesses?
Well, I think that part of the website is, and, you know, just kind of by natural progression of things as being the founder and CEO of that company, people have said, okay, so you're verified on Twitter. How do we get verified on Twitter? I see that you're marketing this way. How can I do that? So I think just by the nature of growth, people have asked for my help in a variety of different ways. Some of those being businesses, some of them being foundations, organizations. I don't anymore do a lot of one-on-one type of life coaching. I did that for a period of time. But so it's always growing and changing. I think right now my focus for 2020 was to really get out there, and have like little coffee shop meetups and events and so forth. So we are adjusting that to some teleseminars and events where we gather experts and, hold conferences and do stuff like that. But my mom always says that website and that company, it has everything but the kitchen sink. And I'm like, bring on the kitchen sink too, because people are so varied. I find anyway that you might not know what they need on any given day. So it's very broad and that's intentional. So
when you talk about coffee shop events, what the hell does that mean?
You know, I started just going to coffee shops and sitting there with Percolate, with my book Percolate. And I'd bring maybe like 20 copies or so and just interact with the people. And instead of charging $15 a book, I'd charge $5, sign the book, and just have like little coffee meetups. But I'd basically go to the coffee shop with my books and then put out in my social media that I was at blah, 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 and people would show up.
Yeah, you didn't get any heat from the owners?
No.
Stuff like that?
No, they love it because everybody buys coffee. So much fun.
That's true.
Yeah, it brings people in.
But now, was that a way for you to percolate as a book, correct?
Percolate, Let Your Best Self Filter Through. It's I'll hold up a copy even. It's my book with Hay House. It's 6 years old now, I can't believe. But it's in this book are the 9 steps of change, basically. Okay. It takes readers through the 9 steps we go through to cope with or make change. And but yeah, so it's all coffee metaphors and self-help. So it's perfect for a coffee store.
Yeah. Does that stuff that you're talking about in those 9 steps, I assume that transcends into different various parts of life, business life and all that?
It does. I think a lot of it, the book is written from a stroke survivor, you know, about a stroke survivor, my father. And so it talks about all the things that he went through as a stroke survivor and all the things that I've gone through with having life-threatening food allergies. And I think it's written from a point of, ooh, something has happened. I'm coping with something or dealing with something, like a club you never signed up for kind of thing. What am I going to do now? And it takes people through the steps we go through to kind of figure out what we're going to do now, from connecting with community to learning how to, at the end, percolate peace and be peaceful with ourselves with whatever's happened. We have another book coming out too to go with that, another self-help book coming out to kind of elaborate on it. But yeah, yeah. There's a lot of information in that book.
I find it really interesting with human nature as to what we're all capable of, but you have to be, I'll just speak for myself, because you know I was a stroke survivor myself, you know, 8 years ago it happened to me. And I tell you what, I mean, you talk about a wake-up call and learning what you are capable of handling when you're in that spot. And you know something, Elizabeth, I would have never known what I was capable of. This is kind of a weird twist. I mean, I don't suggest and hope that anybody has a stroke ever.
Right.
But, you know, it was one of those kinds of things. I remember asking the question, so what are you going to do? Are you going to let this thing destroy you or define you? You know, and I was one of the lucky ones because I could still ask that question. And you know as well as I do, some of these stroke survivors, they're pretty messed up. And I was really lucky that I could still ask that question. And if it wasn't for my background in sport and especially bodybuilding, I don't know. I always say that I probably wouldn't have ended up with this kind of an outcome, but still it's amazing what the human condition can handle, you know, where you never thought you may have been able to until you're in that spot. Would you agree with that?
Totally. And that's a lot of what's in that book. I mean, I've seen what you've gone through, and I'm fascinated. When I heard you had a podcast, I'm like, seriously? He's got a podcast. That's epic. You know, and look at you. You can't, you know, it's amazing the recovery that you've gone through from what happened to seeing you right this moment. And I would tell you, my dad wasn't as great a shape as what you are and so forth, but he had that similar approach to I'm living through this, and you know, here we go.
Yeah.
And I'm taking you all on the ride of living through this, and you're all going to learn a lot. And that's really what a lot of that book is about. I mean, I remember feeling incredibly sorry for my own self with some of the things I had going on with food allergies and marriages not working, you know, my marriage not working out, and just a mess.
Yeah.
And my dad had gone through the stroke, and he was sitting in a speech therapy area going through a test. And it was the classic test they give stroke survivors, you know, an alphabet test. I'm going to say a letter and you're going to tell me what word comes to mind. And this lady warned us. She was like, you know, most people in this condition, they don't say anything, so don't get your hopes up here. You know, my mom was sitting there with me. And instead, she said A, and he said aardvark. And we're like, oh, God, he's completely lost his marbles. You know, we're like, aardvark, where did that come from? And then he said benevolence, courage, determination, excellence. F was a swear word that I've changed to faith. You know, goodness, happiness, integrity, joy. You know, this long list of words. And I remember taking out my journal. It was a moment where I was like, oh, I'm stopped. I'm not going to feel sorry for myself anymore. I'm going to feel okay with what I've got to deal with. And we're definitely going to help you live. This is going to be amazing. And he lived an incredible, for all the crap he had to deal with. Oh my God.
Yeah.
He was in ICU all of 2018.
Wow.
I mean, all of it until he passed away in October of 2018. And he fought for every second of his life. It was incredible, incredibly inspiring to see what you're capable of. I mean, wow. Yeah. They called him they still call him the ICU warrior in Minnesota.
Is that
At Southdale, Edina Southdale. He's the ICU warrior.
How old was he when he had that?
He was 60.
60. Ooh, man.
Yeah.
And now, did it take him? Did he die from that or
something else? I would tell you he was diabetic, and he had like a gradual progression of all the things that happened to you with those things.
Yeah,
but in the end, his kidneys didn't work.
Oh, okay. So he started shutting down.
He did. Yeah. The dialysis, his blood pressure wouldn't stay up during dialysis and things like that. Yeah. It was miserable.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that really brings back some harsh memories, you know, for me.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that, you know, I learned this lesson from my dad. I used to be a cowboy. before I was a cowgirl. I used to be a cowboy. And of course, we grew up on horses. And one of the things about riding horses, I don't know if you've done any horse riding, but my dad told me, because I used to break horses. And he said, when you get bucked off a horse, you get right back on. You don't wait. You don't wait the next week or the week after that, because you're going to get afraid. And it'll just, well, I thought about that, you know, because that for me was like the biggest horse I got bucked off of. I mean, that was shocking to me for that to happen to me, especially being in the industry that I was, you know, yeah. And doing personal training. I mean, it was horrifying and humiliating to me to think that it happened to me. But my dad, boy, I'll tell you what, you know, sometimes I remember as I was growing up, my dad would say something to me. I'd go, yeah, you know how it is. You know, kids, they don't know anything. And you know what? He's in my head to this day. My dad, both my parents are gone. And boy, they're in my head more today than they were when they were alive. And yeah. That was one of the things that I drew back on and said, I have to get back on this horse before it's too late. And I knew that if I didn't get back, for me, it was about doing the things that I did prior to that happening to me. And I knew that if I did not do that, that I was going to be in a bigger prison than I was at that point, being all jacked up. You know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. That's a really important thing that you just said, because so many people don't. I mean, you really do. I say this on Best Ever You all the time. You have a choice in that moment to go down with it or to go this way. And you're this way, and that might not be perfect. It might be a new you that you get to deal with in some way, shape, or form, or whatever it is. But, you know, my dad was the same way. He had field cuts. In other words, from having a stroke, like he couldn't see here and couldn't see here. Terrible field cuts. I think that's what they call them. and he just couldn't see. And he's a writer. Ooh. And so there's a book on Amazon. My brother and I published my dad's book called Presidential Prey. He wrote the whole thing blind.
Is that right?
Yep. Yep.
When you say that okay, this is probably going to be a dumb question. Braille? Or did he
No,
actually
he just typed it. I have no idea how he did it. Oh. I mean, he just could not see. I mean, I don't know how he did that.
Once again, there you go. That's a classic example of somebody just, you know, he's not willing to be in that prison no matter what.
No, and we we talk about the facility. It was called Sister Kenny or Kinney. I think it's Kenny. Facility in Minnesota. I think it's since renamed. But when he was in there with the stroke, my mom and I would kind of walk the halls or pace the halls or whatever you do. And for a long time, I think probably even in my Facebook, there's pictures of the artwork that were hanging on the walls. And people had strokes and they were blind. They painted them with their teeth or their toes or whatever. And better artwork than I know I could ever, you know, in a million years. Fascinating what people can do.
I know. And then when I see stuff and hear stuff like that, it makes me feel like, you know what? Like you said before, there's no reason for me to feel sorry for myself. There really isn't, you know, because of what that person, what I just saw them, what they're capable of doing, you know, I gotta quit, you know, quit sobbing and just pull up my panties and go for it, you know, that thing.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I don't know if your dad drove you guys crazy. I drove my wife crazy, the current wife, crazy because, again, telling you that I had to do the stuff that I did before it happened. Well, I do a lot of traveling, you know, and I'd go to San Francisco and because I had worked there and stuff like that. Yeah. Well, after about 4 months, because I started teaching myself how to drive in the neighborhood. You know, and one day I came to her and I said, okay, I'm going to San Francisco tomorrow alone.
You know,
to be honest with you, she was frightened, but she wasn't half as scared as I was, to be honest with you. Yeah. But I knew at that moment, if I didn't go do that, that was it for me. You know, I had to do that. And I tell you, I'm driving and everything's going good till I get down into like the San Francisco area, like Sacramento, or that kind of where it's busier. And then all of a sudden I had this major, because I didn't have capacity to drive my other arm at that time. I was good with one hand, and I could do the brakes and all that good stuff. My right foot was not all, you know, not 100%. And all of a sudden I got this, what happens, what's going to happen if I have one, another one right now?
Oh no, you had like a panic attack.
Oh my goodness.
Oh no.
And I had to tell you, the short of it is I made it. And when I got there, because I went there to see one of my mentors, I had to go see him.
Yeah.
When I got there, Elizabeth, I broke down and cried like a baby for about 10 minutes. And that was one of the best things that I did that day. But it was like horrifying for everybody, you know, and I'm not sure if it was really fair, but I knew if she went, it wasn't going to be the same. I had to know that I could go alone and do it myself. And, oh, man, I'll never forget that. Some crazy stuff. I don't know if your dad, you know, had that kind of, or he did stuff like that, but.
I mean, he, maybe not in that, he could never drive again because of what happened with his vision and things like that, but, you know. Yeah. You weren't going to keep him from, you know, going to Best Buy and shopping for movies or, you know, get on. Here's one. I mean, I couldn't believe it when my mom was like, yeah, we're coming to visit it from, you know, they live in Minnesota. I'm like, wait, what? And there's this great picture. I'll send it to you. It's my dad, my mom, at the baseball field. He flew here. I mean,
really?
Strokes are, yes. He flew here. He was not going to be down. As much as he could be, he was fighting for every moment to come back.
I love
to
it.
But yeah, they flew here. He was on the baseball field. It's one of the best, my favorite pictures. And you know, and he was a guy who hated flying. I mean, like that was not his thing. He hated flying. And so I remember when I moved to California, to Tahoe and in the Bay Area and stuff like that, getting my dad on a plane from Minnesota to California. I've got great pictures of my dad at Lake Tahoe and all these things.
Wow.
But he was not a flyer, but it was cool that he would fly to come see me. And I flew plenty back home, but, you know, just to come out here.
And I think in that sense, it's almost like, because I talk about this with training. But, you know, so much of this stuff just transcends. I mean, it's just life lessons, you know.
Totally.
It's the same but different, you know. And it's like the motivation was greater than the obstacle. And the fact that the obstacle was his stroke, the motivation to get on that damn plane, because I'm saying what I think and he was thinking at that point, because he hated to fly. But it's like, because I hate flying, I'm going to prove that I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, just to overcome the obstacle. That's kind of what it sounds like.
Completely.
I kind of seem like I know your dad already.
Yeah, no, he was great too. Yeah, you know, you would have totally loved my dad. He was amazing. Everybody loved my dad. At his funeral, so many people showed up, and it was very clear how many lives he had touched, because it wasn't just my brothers, it was all their friends, and it was my friends.
Right.
And, I mean, there was just, there's so many of us that, you know, his life touched. And, you know, trying to remind people about on Best Ever You, and in Percolate, and you know, when I'm putting posts out in social media and so forth, I've started to say, pause for people other than what's going on right now under a normal setting, because I had this experience after he died. I was in the grocery store, clearly hovering over something and not really functioning very well at that moment.
Yeah.
And this lady, an older lady, came up, put her arm around me, and she said, honey, which one of your parents died?
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, how do you know? I had no idea who she was. It's like a little, almost like a little angel appeared or something. It was like, what in the world? And I said, oh, my dad just died. And she said, that look on your face is unmistakable.
Wow.
And
amazing.
I'm like, oh. And she's like, why don't you just let me help you? And, you know, but those moments where somebody actually stops long enough to pay attention to you, or, you know, not just hurry all the time by each other.
Right.
And again, talking under different circumstances, perhaps than right now, but to really kind of be very aware, even in these times, you're not completely aware what's going on in another person's world. Like, you know, I could just assume you all suited up, everything's perfect, you know, kind of thing. But if you scratch below the surface, you know, we all have things going on, and to really truly care about one another is important. And it doesn't have to be, you know, super, you know, deep caring or anything like that. But more so, like, I'm trying to say, like, when you're even like in a grocery store line under normal circumstances and things like that, and you're impatient and you're frustrated.
And people
are still doing that. Trust me. People are even more impatient sometimes, you know, but to really stop and pause and pay attention to other people and practice some patience.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, this Corona thing has changed people to a degree, because people are different. And yet they're, you know, look, we're going to be cranky and all that, but it's a different feel now. Yeah. You know, there's a little more, it's like this thing kind of woke, yeah, a little reset here, a pause, as you're saying.
Yeah,
for
I
sure.
The great happened. Pause, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's been, well, this is one for the ages, no doubt about it. You know, I've been around long enough that I've seen now a few things, you know, the Ebola, the HIV, the everything, you know, and this is one that is, whew, it's a doozy, yeah. to say the least.
Yeah, it sure is. You know, I used to, my dad, like, let's take you to Target for a minute, you know, and him in the movie section of Target shopping for DVDs, he would accidentally bump into people. And there was this one time I was kind of standing a little bit away from him, just sort of not hovering, you know, just kind of letting him have his space. And he bumped into somebody and they were like, "Old man, what's wrong with, you know," trying to like completely pick a fight with, you know, him. And, just "old man, what's wrong with you" came out, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was, I swear to God, the people were going to like beat up my dad almost for like, you know, bumping into him. It was that serious of an offense, you know, kind of thing. And people were really mad. And he tried to explain that he was blind and couldn't see them and apologize. And they just would not accept the apology. Yeah. So he actually typed up cards. And so if he was ever in a store and he bumped into you, he'd hand a card that said, "I'm so sorry that I've bumped into you. Please understand I'm a stroke survivor," blah, blah, blah. And that really got me thinking about pausing for other people. That one, aside from my own story of when he passed away and I was, you know, hovering over Paris, sobbing apparently, that story was really powerful to me, because on the outside of him, you couldn't really tell.
Right.
That anything was wrong with him. He was a big dude. I mean, he was 6'4", and you couldn't tell at first glance that he had had a stroke. He was so high functioning with his stroke, but he could not see. And so when he would bump into people, he would give out a card. Isn't that interesting?
Well, that story that you just told gave me chills. It just gave me chills. And I would imagine that thing that he did with that card changed the way that people treated him. I would say, for the most part, completely different than that first where those people wanted to get in his face.
I still think he did it. No, but I still think he did it, too, to teach them some awareness for people. You know, like, some awareness. Here's a life lesson for you kind of thing, as well as for his own safety and their well-being and things like that. But I really think he was on this mission also of, like, you know, not everybody's perfect. And here's a tiny reminder that, you know, I certainly
I like
am not.
That. Yeah. Yeah, I like covered. That.
Yeah, we.
So tell me. Oh. Go ahead. No, finish.
Well, you know, another really interesting, I don't have a card either that I'll share with you, but my dad had passed away, and my sister and my mom and I were in the line for Starbucks getting coffee. And we were crying and miserable and, you know, I don't know how we were driving, really. It's kind of like, but we were in the line for Starbucks getting coffee, and we pull up to the drive-thru, and we get this letter kind of thing. It's all typed out, and it's basically the car in front of you has paid for coffee today, blah, 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 blah. And, I mean, my dad had really just died the day before. And, you know, we were getting coffee to go over to my sister's house and commiserate and, you know, get flowers for the funeral and all these things, and they paid for our coffee. And I told our son Quade what had happened. His name's Quade Garino, and he kind of took that idea and played it from Percolate and created for his senior project the Percolate Project. So I just dawned on me, speaking of cards, he typed up like they're little orange cards, and it basically says that we've just paid for your order as part of the Percolate Project. And And he was like, Mom, that's so cool. Do you remember that time we bought bagels for the people at Bethesda Bagel in D.C.? You know, I was teaching him random acts of kindness. But for a senior project, he did that. And I'm going on and on. But through his project, people have paid off medical bills for other people.
Is that right?
Things that you never would
expect. What a cool thing.
From just a little cup of coffee thing. But there's a website. I think it's percolateproject.com or org. I'm not sure which one it is.
Yeah.
But he wants to turn that into like a 501c3 and have people donate to it so he can give away bigger things.
That's pass it forward. Really that is really cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like he got some of that from his mommy.
He's pretty mindful on his own. You have to be.
It just, maybe a little bit of a trait there.
He got a little bit of percolate. But, you know, we hemmed and hawed. Sorry, I think I have mascara in my eye. I put mascara on for this.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. You put your tie on, I put some mascara on.
I put some mascara on, too. I did a better job than you did, apparently.
I think so.
Don't tell anybody.
We didn't put the book on that website, like, to make it so that people really understood that it was his. He's like, no, this is mine. I'm like, I completely respect that. And he's like, it's a great idea, and I like the name Percolate, but I'm taking this, Mom.
Tell me about your food allergies. How did this all come about, and how did you know that you had food allergies?
So I got food allergies about 24 years ago. I'm going to be 51, so I wasn't one of those people born with food allergies. I got them after a pregnancy, actually. Something just completely changed in me chemistry-wise. I have no idea. And figuring it out was very scary because I would eat something and just sort of, you know, my blood pressure would drop. I'm like, well, that's odd. Back then, no one knew really that there were food allergies or anything. So my dad would say, like, I think you have epilepsy or seizure disorder. We need to go to the Mayo Clinic, do something. And it turned out to be, I had a near fatal allergic reaction actually at a Starbucks after eating almonds. And
is that right?
Yeah, and my ex-husband drove me to the hospital. On arrival, I think my blood pressure, I want to say it was, I have to look back in the records, but I think it was 50 over 20. It's either 60 over 30 or 50 over, I mean, it was dying material.
And
it took a whole lot of epinephrine and a whole lot of Benadryl to keep me on the planet for sure. I go back and I thank those doctors every year at Burnsville. But it was there wouldn't have been enough time for the ambulance to arrive. So he carried me to the car and drove me. And thank God if the hospital had been any more distant from the Starbucks, you know, it was God close by, I would not be here because my blood pressure was so low. And the scary thing, they knew so little about food allergies. And if you know me, I don't drink, smoke, do drugs, take prescription drugs or anything, but they thought it was a drug overdose coming in.
Really?
Oh yeah. They're like, drug overdose. I could kind of hear at that point, my blood pressure was so low, but I can remember my ex-husband, I just call him Mike. I never say ex-husband actually, but Mike, saying she doesn't do drugs, you know, and they're like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, no, there's no drugs. This is, she ate something and this is what's happened.
Yeah.
And, that began the doctor came in and said, my dear, you have food allergies and you're lucky to be alive. Definitely don't eat almonds. And I don't know what else you're allergic to, but they sent me to allergists and testing and things like that. So I have four allergies. They're all life threatening and they're fish. Ooh. Yep. Fish, shellfish, peanut, and tree nut. Awful.
Let me ask you this. Is it the actual food itself? What's in it that causes this life-threatening allergy to you?
I have definitely never done the research on what is actually in the food. I'm sure it's a protein that your body's reacting to, but it treats it like it's a little foreign invader. And it is just, my response to food allergies my response is anaphylaxis. And my anaphylaxis is my blood pressure tanks. Yeah. I don't have the throat closey kind of thing. I kind of feel my throat itchy a little bit, but I don't have that. My blood pressure nosedives. And it's more like a digestive anaphylaxis type thing. It's a death clear out. It's sudden too. It's so scary.
That's what makes it, I think, really bad is the fact that it's so sudden.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. It's instant.
My oldest son, he was allergic to, and we learned this when he was very young, probably, he must have been, I'm going to say maybe 4, 5, 6, something like that. Yeah. Maybe a little bit older than that. But he was allergic to a preservative that was in pinto beans. And it would do what you're talking about to his throat, just shut him down to the point where we had to take him. Yeah, we had to put him in like in a tent in the hospital. And it was so hard for him to breathe that he was panting like this, you know, really short breaths like that. To the point where his eyes got black. He was working so hard, it shut down his adrenals is what it did. It was working so hard. But you didn't even have that. I mean, yours is just like, oh my goodness, I can't even believe that.
Yeah. So I've had a number of close, I don't know what you want to call them, just close brushes with death, I would say, through allergic reactions. But two stick out, that one with the almonds and Starbucks, and then the other, I was 6 months pregnant with Cam, our baseball player. And that was definitely like we're checking out, both of us mode. And it was to walnuts and a cookie. I was visiting Minnesota. I came in the door. My mom's like, cool, I made cookies. I had no idea I was allergic to walnuts. Ate one. Guess what? We're allergic to walnuts. And that was terrifying. That was a week stay in the hospital, kind of like what you're. Very scary. But and the interesting thing, too, being pregnant like that at the time, they weren't going to give you epinephrine for sure.
Yeah, right.
But they did all sorts of things to try and keep us alive. And so I feel pretty lucky. I know that sounds interesting, but I was just talking to somebody earlier who also has the same 4 food allergies I have, a guy by the name of Kyle Dine. We both do
the same four.
Allergy? Yeah, he's got 2 more, but he's definitely got the same 4, and we do a lot with food allergy awareness, and he does a ton of stuff with kids and things like that. He's younger, he's 36, and we were both talking about how lucky we feel, because, I mean, we really have brushed, you know, with death, and as you know, being a stroke survivor, you know, you have that feeling of, like, you try to not think like, oh, I'm on borrowed time. I did that for a while. I did that whole bit for a while, you know, like, oh, I'm on borrowed time. What do I do?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like victim-ish. I don't know if I like to operate like I'm on borrowed time.
Right.
But I definitely use my time more wisely, I would tell you. Yeah. I don't waste it, for sure.
Oh, yeah. No, I put the different whole spin on that. That's for darn sure. Hey, well, let me ask you this. I mean, I'm sure you've thought about this, because I certainly would. Not to put bad thoughts into your head, but how do you know from day till today till tomorrow that all of a sudden you have another food allergy that you don't know about? I mean, how do you deal with that? Do you go and taste the food just a little bit first and see, okay, wait, does it take my long for it?
Sometimes. You probably hit the head of the nail of anxiety right there. Food allergies. I think a lot of people probably have that, and you're wondering, did they make this the same way, or did the ingredients change, or I'm kind of a creature of routine. If I know what's safe when I eat out, I know I'm always checking.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're a little bit at the mercy of food labels and people doing the right thing when they cook your food at a restaurant, and you don't know all that stuff. But you're right. I mean, I don't have a great answer for that. It's the short answer, other than to be extremely careful.
Yeah.
I don't trust other people's cooking very well at all.
I don't blame you.
Because the word should gets used. Once I hear the word should, you should be okay. I'm like, no.
Yeah. That's like a major flag.
Red flag. You should be okay. But you know, people are just trying to be nice, and you know, I'm not a good person to bake cookies for or cakes or, you know, it'll go.
If you came to my house, I would just give you a glass of water and say, I hope you get full on that. I hope it's good for you.
That's actually such a better thing to do. I'd feel way better than you trying to feed me. I it's so uncomfortable when people are trying to feed you and they don't get it.
Yeah, because if you can't take water, I just can't be your friend. I'm sorry. I'm shallow that way.
my brother's sister and my sister both have like researched this to the point of like when I go to their house, they're like, we have made this for you. This is perfect. And even then I was like, oh, I'm going to die from this, you know? And and they're like, no, we assure you, you won't. And if something happens, we know how to use your Epi and we know how to call 911.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that makes, making me feel better.
Yeah. The intention is good.
The intention is epic, but the creature is routine. However, but you know, I was going to tell you, I'm going to hold up another book. Because we just did this book, if I can. Hijack your moment for a minute.
No, I want you to. Yeah. A lesson for every child.
Well, yeah, this is a lesson for every child learning about food allergies. Okay. And Sally Huss, she is the kind of the mastermind behind the book. Like, I'm like, Sally, can we do a book about food allergies? She's like, we sure can. And it's endorsed by all these amazing people like Medical Alert Foundation and FACT. Right. And I mean, it's endorsed. And this tells the story of Jack, who has food allergies. And he goes into the classroom and tells the class about food allergies so they understand him a little better. But he's so cute. He's got his little Medical Alert on. And it's a really very cute visual kid's book. Yeah, that's being well received. But Sally has written 100 children's books. And she'd be a great guest for you. She's over 80. She's former Wimbledon finalist, Sally Moore.
Oh, I got to talk to her.
You do. She'll hold up all of her books too. But so can I keep going? I'm going to keep going to Sally Haas. This is about Sally Haas. This isn't about me.
I want you to do this at the end of the show anyway. So we're getting pretty close.
Well, so from that, I was reading Sally's books. I'm like, there's 100 of them. I got to catch up with you, you know, kind of thing. And so I came across Positive Pete. And Positive Pete, you know, it's a great book. It, you know, it's written for boys. It's got a certificate at the end. I'm like, we need a girl's version of Positive Pete. So we have Self-Confident Sandy. And it's so cute too. And so we're writing books together. And it's got a little certificate at the end of it and all this stuff. But this is, let me show you Sally. You'll get a kick out of it. Sally is amazing.
Oh man. Yeah.
She's amazing. That's her stack of books right there.
That is crazy stuff. Yeah, I'd like to talk to her. She'd be fun.
Yeah, she's in the Hall of Fame at Occidental for tennis.
Is that right?
Cool. Super brilliant.
I'm a big tennis fan. Huge.
Are you? Oh yeah. You'll love her. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm terrible at tennis. And she's like, well, we don't have that in common. No, we don't.
Yeah. So anyway, listen, as we're wrapping this thing up, I was going to tell you, you know, if there's anything that you would like to promote, which you have, and I'm happy that you did. If there's anything else that you'd like to finish this off with, now's a good time.
I'm actually so thankful and grateful for you for having me on. So thank you. No, I'm good. I actually want to talk to you about your book because I think your book goes hand in hand with Percolate.
I think it would go hand in hand. Yes, I do.
I mean, I think that'd be a great message for this show too. Your book's amazing.
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, anytime. And I was when I heard that you were going to be on, I was really looking forward to this because I remember the radio show that I did with you. I remember having a good time there, and that was probably early on when I was just starting to get out there a little bit. And I think you might have been one of the first ones that I did as far as a radio show like that.
Yeah, that radio show is probably 9 or 10 years old now, I think. It's the seventh season, but I think it's older than that on there. And when we did that, when we started doing that radio show, it's a very old podcast. Yeah. And it still airs live, but now it syndicates out everywhere, like iHeartRadio and iTunes. It's got millions of downloads. I mean, it's so much fun. Yeah, it's the best ever you show, if you're wondering what we're talking about. But yeah, you were one of the very first victim guests.
You gotta start somewhere.
Totally.
I'm glad to be your victim. No, it was it was delightful. You have a great energy about you, so I always look forward to speaking to people like yourself. You know, you bring a lot to the table, and I want to thank you very much for coming on, and you know, if we can do some more of this stuff I'm down for it, as they say.
No, it'd be so much fun. And there is, does Joe go with you? There's a
no. He's in Florida. He was in Vegas, but now he's in Florida.
He's such a champion of yours.
Oh, I know. And you know how some people just stay in your life for a long time?
He's amazing. Yeah.
He's been like that, you know, and he's just been so there and just, you know, he has perfect willingness. I mean, he's a pretty amazing guy that way.
Yeah.
And I talk to him all the time. He follows my podcast. I do all these podcasts and I do these Instagram posts. I start ranting a little bit to get stuff off my chest, you know. But he's always there. He'll be one of the first ones that comments, like, all the time, you know. He's always there.
Yeah, he does that on Best Ever You too. He's a great guy. Huge champion of others. And I love people like that where you just you feel understood and accepted instantly.
No doubt about that. So,
and I appreciate the interest in baseball with Cam too. That's always really fun.
Yeah.
When somebody asks, how's your son doing? That's a really hard, that's a really hard grind, getting 4.0s in college and being a college baseball player. That is a grind. Yeah. Oh,
that
my
is
gosh.
A grind. Yeah. Especially they play so many games. My kid played college and professional baseball. And so I know what you're talking about, but he didn't do 4.0. You know, he actually became a better student after the game. And he didn't, he told me something one time. He goes, Dad, I didn't know I was a good student. I really didn't know, because he was so into his sport. He just got passing grades. That's where his head was. He had perfect willingness for his sport. But when he got out of the sport, and he said, I said, I knew you were smart, Shane. It's just that you were distracted by your baseball, you know. You almost had to be that way to get where he got, you know, in a way, because it's so competitive that way, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but anyway, one of these days I'll talk to you again. I'd like to come and talk to you about the Three Strokes book on your show.
Please.
If you'd like. So let's have our... I'll have Kara get with you and we'll get this all squared away.
Awesome. So great to talk with you.
Nice to talk to you. You take care of yourself.
Oh, you too. Stay safe and well.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Serious Growth Podcast. For more episodes like the one you just listened to, subscribe to us on your mobile podcast app and leave us a review. If you'd like to reach out, you can find us online at seriousgrowth.com. Until next time, train smart and train hard.